You're listening to MLB.com Extras, brought to you by MLB.tv. It's baseball everywhere.
Welcome to the 2017 winter meetings here in sunny Orlando, Florida. I'm Dani Wexelman, sitting with Jane Lee, who covers the Oakland Athletics for MLB.com. Jane, how you doing?
I'm good.
Talk about Billy Bean and this youth movement that he's been preaching about, and a lot of teams are shifting to this. You have Matt Olson, Matt Chapman on those corner infield spots, and you guys aren't slowing down anytime soon.
No, I mean, this is something that they're really excited about, and for good reason. I mean, they've worked hard to, you know, kind of stock up their farm system again. I believe the term that Billy Bean used the other day was, it used to be blah, and now, you know, they
Billy
have
Bean said blah.
Blah. Yeah, I almost had to, like, make sure he said that, but I listened to it again. It was definitely blah. But the point is, it's not blah anymore, and, you know, they really do believe that they have one of the better farm systems in all of baseball right now. And not just that, but, you know, a lot of the guys that have been down there are now up, and they're here to stay. This was always the plan. I know for a long time it was probably hard to, you know, visualize and see it come together.
Yeah.
I know Ace fans have been through a lot in recent years, and even though the record would maybe indicate that last year wasn't all that great, you know, there's a lot to be excited about with these guys, especially the Matt Chapmans and Matt Olsons. So,
all right. So another note on the excitement part, you guys signed Yusmeiro Petit to a two-year deal. And what I really liked that you wrote about is that he's willing to do whatever, long-term, short-term relief, however he needs to be used to win, he wants to do it. He's coming from division rival Angels. What's it like to have a guy who is willing to do anything to help his team win?
Yeah, I mean, this is what the A's are all about. I mean, you know, they really value versatile guys, and usually you use that term when you're talking about position players. But with Petit, it really does apply to him as well. You know, this is a guy that has started, relieved, you know, spot started. So really just there for anything. He insists he doesn't prefer one role over the other. You know, you never really believe a pitcher when he says that, but you appreciate the fact that he just wants to do whatever to help the team. So, I mean, they're going to use him in all those roles probably. I mean, did a clearly tremendous job for the Angels last year. Pitched a ton of innings, and that's really important for a team that has such a young starting staff that will probably be relying on their bullpen a lot.
All right, so you guys are sending in questions now on Facebook, so Jane is going to answer them to her best ability. We've got David, who says, hope we can land a starter and a right-handed bat that plays outfield. What do you think about that?
I think a starter is a little lower on their to-do list right now. It's not out of the question. It's just they have other priorities, like that right-handed outfield bat.
Right.
But they have so many young starters right now, and they really do believe in these guys.
They
a lot of
them. A
yeah, they scuffled last year, but you know, they think it was just kind of part of their development, and they think that these guys do have a chance to be really good.
Yeah.
So. Even though it would make sense for them to maybe add a veteran starter, it's just not something that they see, you know, themselves doing right now. That could, of course, change.
Yep.
But, yeah, shifting over to the outfield, it sounds like, have been talking with the Cardinals about Stephen Piscotty. And, I mean, this makes sense for everyone. The Cardinals, you know, just got Marcelo Ozuna
Literally, right now,
it's happening.
It's amazing what's happening. We're moving at the winter meetings.
Yes.
We're getting
finally there.
Right?
Yeah. So this is good news for the A's because the Cardinals obviously have a glut of outfielders willing to deal Piscotty. And Piscotty's from the Bay Area.
That's right.
Has a very good contract. You know, signed through, I believe it's 21 with a club option for 22.
Okay.
And, you know, this fits into their long-term plan. This isn't a guy that is just going to be inserted for 1 year and then, you know, wait and see and go from there.
Yeah.
They want to incorporate guys that can, you know, play with Chapman and Olson, Chad Pender, you know, all these young guys for years to come.
The youth movement is not, it's not a moment. It is a long-term marathon that the A's are trying to incorporate. Okay, so let's go back to the starting rotation. Alan asks, who is our number two starting pitcher?
Number two?
Number two.
That's interesting.
He wants to know the number two. He must
know
the number one.
Yeah, I mean, can you tell me the number one?
Yeah, Alan, let us know who you think number one is.
I mean, I guess, but you know, based on who they have right now, I would think that Kendall Graveman would be their number one, which would set up Sean Manaea as their number two.
Okay.
I also wouldn't be surprised if Manaea at some point was considered their number one.
Yeah.
You know, I know the number ones, number twos, threes, whatever. Sometimes it's overrated talking about it. but really they do view Manaea as a frontline guy. Of course, Graveman has been around a little bit longer, more experience, started opening night last year. So he's probably the guy that will be back out there. So I guess to answer the question, I would go with Sean Manaea right now.
Awesome. All right, Sean Manaea, number two. Okay, let's move from starting pitching to the bullpen. From Andrew, he wants to know, bullpen, perhaps Addison Reed?
Probably not.
Okay.
Probably not.
Sorry about that, Andrew.
Yeah. They, you know, they are looking at more bullpen additions, even though they already made two moves, not just Petit, but added Emilio Pagan. From the Mariners, but really they're looking for a lefty reliever. They only have one in there right now, Daniel Coulomb, and they would like another. They have a ton of righties, so they're kind of all set there, and they like the pieces they have in place, but they would like to add a lefty before the offseason ends.
Okay, all right. Let's circle back to Stephen Piscotty, because David wants to know, if the A's do get Piscotty, do they stop there? Are they done? They're not done. We just said that. There's a there's a lot of
they need a reliever, and I mean, it's still early. And you know, even you know, you see clubs' to-do lists, and you know, they check those boxes, but there's always work to be done. Yeah. A's are never gonna stop looking, and you know, for ways to
improve. Baseball.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So no, I would be very surprised if that was it. But it would be a big thing for them to complete, just because it is their priority. And I think they would feel a lot better about themselves once that's all said and done.
Do you feel like that's going to get done here in Orlando? There's one day left, Thursday, Rule 5. So there's still a lot of moving parts, but do you think the deal could get done with Stephen Piscotty?
I do.
Okay.
Right. Obviously a lot of moving parts.
Definitely.
The Cardinals seem a little busy right now. But there does seem to be the belief that they can get it done, because it has been something that has been on their radar for a while, something they've been talking about.
We've been talking about that.
Yeah. So yes, I do think it can, and hopefully will get done by tomorrow.
Awesome. Okay, if you are just joining us on Facebook, we are talking with Jane Lee, who covers the Athletics for MLB.com. We're taking your questions, anything and everything, winter meetings, hot stove, offseason, all that jazz. So we have Matt, who wants to know, can you project the opening day infield around the horn?
Okay, well,
yes.
At first base, of course, Matt Olson.
Okay.
I'm going to stick with Jed Lowry at second base right now. I know there's a lot of talk about maybe the A's trading him.
Yeah,
Just because a lot of clubs do need second basemen. But the A's did pick up his option for a reason, value him a lot. So as of now, we'll stick with Jed there.
Okay.
And then go into the left side, Marcus Semien, of course, at shortstop, and Matt Chapman at third base. Now, catcher, a little tricky right now. The A's still insist that Bruce Maxwell will be their primary catcher next season.
Yeah, Troy was asking about the catcher situation.
Yeah, so obviously there's a legal process that's ongoing. Hopefully will be wrapped up in January.
Okay.
I think the A's feel good about things and are very hopeful that things will be settled with Bruce, that he'll be with them in spring training.
Great.
And I don't think they would just say that if they didn't actually believe it.
Sure.
So at this point, you know, you kind of go with what they say, and they say that Bruce will be there.
Okay, we're being asked to put on your look in your crystal ball, project the future. Jessica is asking, what numbers do you project for Matt Olson in his first full season?
Whoa.
Yeah.
Big numbers.
Big numbers. Yes. Definitely big numbers.
Yeah. I mean, you know, you don't want to get too ahead of yourself, but I mean, based on what we saw last year, him looking so comfortable, if he can stay healthy, I mean, I think he's definitely capable of a 40 homer season.
Okay.
I mean, that's a lot for
a young
guy. That's
pretty exciting, yeah.
And then I'm sure there's some people that are like, wait, that's it? But, you know, you look at what he did.
That's a lot.
You know, you look at his home run totals in just 59 games last year, 24, and you're doing the math over 162, that's a lot more than 40.
Right.
But I don't know that he could keep up that pace over the course of a full 162. But, yeah, he might be right there beside Chris Davis in that 40 homer club.
I like that. Okay, our last one from Jack. Thank you, Jack, for this. If you had to put a win total on 2018, how many?
You know what? A fan at the end of this past season reminded me that I projected the exact win total this year.
Did you?
Apparently, I was asked in a previous podcast.
So you were looking in your crystal ball.
Yeah,
and it came
exactly.
True.
And okay. I said 75, apparently, and they won 75 games.
Okay.
So
you're going to go up for sure, right?
I know. I'm going up. They're trending up.
Yep.
You know, I do see them as a 500 club. I think they're very capable of that. But maybe we'll go with a round number and say 80.
I like it.
A tough division.
Yes,
I want to give them more credit, but it's a really tough division. So
okay.
I think 80 is fair, and I think that that's still on that upward trend.
Awesome. So. All right. Well, thanks for everybody for hanging out with us. I'm Dani Wexelman. This is Jane Lee. She's covering the Athletics, anything and everything for MLB.com. If you want more information, you can go to athletics.com, and we'll talk to you soon. Hello, welcome to the 2017 Winter Meetings. We are in Orlando, sunny Orlando right now. I'm Dani Wexelman with Richard Justice, our executive columnist, and T.R. Sullivan, who covers the Rangers for MLB.com. And we're going to be taking your questions on Facebook, so if you have some, please send those in. I'm going to start things off, though, because we had a little bit of news this morning. The Diamondbacks and the Rangers were talking about pitching, and the name that came up, Ace Zach Greinke. Now, the Diamondbacks could be looking to unload some money, so this could be a good two-way deal here. TR, I want to start with you. How serious is this deal?
Well, they've talked, Dani, they've talked a couple of times, and it's been serious, but like Richard knows, it's a lot of obstacles. Obviously, the financial part is very complicated. Greinke has a well-deserved but very large contract, and it has something that has to be worked out. You have to talk about the players who are going back and forth. So there's a lot of things still to be discussed, and it may not happen, but it's definitely an item of news here in the winter meetings that these two teams have talked about pitching in general and Greinke in specific.
And I guess Patrick Corbin, has his name come up? That would be one to watch. The Diamondbacks are listening on him. And it tells that John Daniels is casting a wide net. What does he need? One more starting pitcher? He signed Pfister. He signed Minor. He needs bullpen help, but this is to get one more top half of the rotation starting pitcher.
Yeah, they came in, Richard, into the offseason. They needed three starters. They said that, made it clear. They got Doug Pfister, okay? They got Mike Minor, who started and relieved. He relieved for the Royals last year, so he could do both. So he's not guaranteed a spot in the rotation, although the intention is for him, Mike Minor, to pitch in the rotation. So under that scenario, they need one more starter. So, and I think they need somebody at the top of the rotation. They need a guy who can give them innings because Minor was a reliever last year. Pfister had basically a half season with the Red Sox. They need a guy who can really come in and shoulder a lot of innings. And I think obviously Greinke's one of those guys. You look at the free agent market, there's Jake Arrieta. There's Yu Darvish, who everybody knows pitched in Texas and has a good relationship with the team. So those are they're thinking big. They're not thinking small for that last spot in the rotation.
So, okay, going from starters to relievers, let's talk about that for a second. So Fernando Rodney here in Orlando met with the Rangers, so his name is being tossed around, and then Nats right-handed reliever Brandon Kinsler is also a name. Can we see Rodney shooting arrows in Arlington, TR?
Well, I think what the Rangers want is they want a lot of relievers. They need a bulk relievers. And what they don't have right now is they don't have a guy who's been the closer before, who has a 20-save season on his resume. Alex Claudio, who led him with 11 saves last year, and they like Alex Claudio, but they also like him in middle relief because he can pitch multiple innings. So they would like a guy, whether it's a project, a reclamation, or a guy coming off an injury, they would like at least somebody, like they did with Jason Grilly last summer, get a guy who's had experience in the role. So even if he's not the closer, he can mentor some of the young relievers. And you look at a guy like Fernando Rodney and what he did with the D-backs last year and how he mentored their young relievers. And the Rangers got some young kids, Jose LeClerc being one of them, Ricardo Rodriguez, Matt Bush, a lot of young relievers who could use a good mentor. And I've been told that Fernando Rodney would be a great guy for that. So even if he's not their closer, he would still be a guy that could really help this team more than just pitching innings.
Fernando Rodney, by the way, is a terrific guy. He's a guy you want in your clubhouse. Yeah, and for all sorts of reasons. They're going to give Matt Bush a chance to win a spot in the rotation. How do they think that will play out? How do you think that will play out? What's his ultimate role going to be going forward?
You know, they're going to give him a chance to start. I think he'll end up in the bullpen. I think he's a valuable arm in the bullpen. He's never pitched in as a starter. I think they're going to look at it. But I think my guess is ultimately he'll end up in the bullpen again.
Does he need – so what is he? He throws fastball, slider. Just he's a power guy.
Right.
Does he have a changeup? Does he have an off-speed pitch that would help him make that conversion?
He would need that for the rotation. He'd need a third pitch. He'd need an off-speed pitch because you're right. He's power, power, power.
A real power.
Yes.
Okay, we have some questions coming in on Facebook, so we're going to get to those. If you are on Facebook, send in your questions. We're going to get these answered right now with T.R. Sullivan and Richard Justice. So fans want to know, we're going to go back to you, Darvish, now. We know that it could be a matter of a financial move. Do you see him coming back? Is he going to have a reunion with the Rangers?
My guess is no. I know he wants a big contract. Everybody wants a big contract. But I think there's just too many obstacles to getting this thing done. I think they're going to look at Arrieta. I think they may look at Greinke. They may look at other places, too. But, you know, I know they like Darvish. I know Darvish likes Texas. I'm not optimistic about a reunion. I know it's been talked about. Both sides have talked about it a little bit. But it just doesn't feel like it's going to happen.
What's the plan in center field?
Delino DeShields finished the season as a center fielder. And they love him offensively. And they've made it clear that he's okay defensively, but they want him to get better. They want Delino DeShields to get better defensively.
Are they shopping for a center fielder?
Right now they're going for pitching. They need pitching. You know, the thing about Delino DeShields was 2 years ago he had a bad year offensively. He had a bad year, and he lost his job in center field. So he went into the offseason, and he worked his tail off. Did a great job. He got with his father, former Major League second baseman Delino DeShields. And they really worked on his offense, his whole approach to the plate, his body, getting his body in shape, everything like that. And he ended up having a terrific offensive season. So I think that now, this winter, Delino DeShields is going to go to work on that defense. And if he improves like he did on his offense, you're going to have a nice-looking center fielder out there.
I want to switch gears just really quickly to Nomar Mazara, a really cool story that came out of Texas. And sending 300 gloves to students at CF Carr Elementary in Dallas, which is great. There's a complex that's very close to those kids, an academy, so they have the chance to learn and grow and play the game. That's pretty cool of him, right?
Well, yeah, the Rangers do a great job of getting their young kids out into the community and getting them to understand the importance of community involvement. You know, I think next week they're going to go to the Children's Hospital in both Fort Worth and Dallas, and, you know, they go to schools, and I know they've had stuff at the area food bank. So, you know, Nomar is a great kid. His father was in the Dominican Republic Navy, which is kind of like the Coast Guard, but a very serious thing. Yeah. And he was very high up in the echelon. This is a great kid. He understands. He gets it. He gets what it's all about, dealing with the media, taking care of himself, approaching the game right, playing the game right. You know, Nomar Mazara is pretty special.
Whenever Joey Gallo got to the big leagues, he came in as a top 10 prospect in all of baseball. It didn't happen overnight for him. But seeing him break out this season, was it sort of a reminder that young players don't come with a timetable? You have to be patient sometime. You have to allow them to get here and succeed and fail and succeed. And now look at what they have. I mean, they have this guy that's as much fun to watch as anybody.
Yeah, the one thing we learned about Joey Gallo last year that was amazing is he has a great baseball aptitude. And, you know, you look at this big, brawny, power-hitting guy, and sometimes that doesn't come across. But this guy knows baseball. He understands the game. And it really came out how smart he is and how baseball savvy he is and really how he was able to grasp the need to make adjustments at the plate as far as controlling the strike zone, you know, hitting his pitch, all of those things that hitters eventually learn with experience. He really amazed a lot of people last year with how he made the adjustments.
Jeff Banister told us yesterday that on the first day of spring training or early in spring training, Joey Gallo came into his office and said, "Don't give up on me. Give me a chance to play. I've worked hard for this opportunity, and I intend to make the most of it." And that's what we want to see. And also, a guy that can hit the ball 475 feet, that's you can watch a lot of that.
That never hurts, right?
No, you want to see that.
Let's talk about that for a second. What is the process of a player going in and talking to someone like Jeff Banister and saying, hey, like, you know, I don't need a pat on the back or anything, but I want to play and I want the chance. How does that happen?
I think that's the difference between good managers and the others.
Yeah.
You know, after Ken Giles had a rough game in the World Series, he just went into A.J. Hinch's office, shut the door. And basically, he felt A.J. Hinch had built a relationship with him that he felt he could just vent to him, hear him, talk to him, listen to him. And that's the way Ron Washington had that relationship in Texas.
Yes.
And I guess Jeff Banister has done that same thing. I don't know, in your experience, it speaks a lot to me when a player feels he can go talk to the manager. Now, you got to, as in the case of Joe Torre in New York, sometimes you got to be prepared for an answer you don't want to hear.
Yeah, exactly.
But it does speak well.
Yeah, I mean, that is a huge thing. You know, we saw that, Danny, this winter with all the managerial openings around the game and people talking about what they're looking for, and a lot of it was communication. Mm-hmm. That's what they wanted from their managers, a guy who could communicate with players, and yep. It's a huge thing. I mean, everybody needs to know when to drop a bunt or when to change relievers and all that stuff, but, you know, this is not the my way or the highway anymore. I mean, the manager does have the final say, the buck stops here and all that good stuff, but a good manager communicates with his players, and Jeff has always had an open door policy. And like you said, sometimes the answer is no. Or sometimes no, that's not the way it's going to work. But but you definitely need to be able to talk to your players and make them feel welcome, and Jeff does that.
Okay, guys, how about one bold prediction from each of you? We have one day left. We have the Rule 5 draft on Thursday. So what can still happen here? What can get done, signed, sealed, delivered for the Texas Rangers? Justice?
No, I think they can go get a reliever, you know, and I think they're still looking to shore up the bullpen, you know, in terms of that, in terms of the center field, in terms of the high-end starting pitching. That may take a while because I think given the Ohtani, given what happened with Giancarlo Stanton, I think maybe we're a little bit behind in terms of the free agent market. But I still think there's time to get something done before they go, unless John Daniels is leaving today.
No, I don't think John Daniels is leaving until after that Rule 5 draft.
Okay.
You expect anything to happen?
I don't expect anything. A guy made a great point is this whole offseason was held up by the Ohtani process. Mm-hmm. And because it was a rare instance where everybody wanted the player because of the circumstances. Everybody was involved in the player. So that kind of held everybody back. So I think what I was told is a lot of people are playing catch up here at the winter meetings. Mm-hmm. And there's a lot of conversations going on and a lot of discussions going on, but a lot of it's not ready to be come to fruition yet. We're starting to see some deals. I mean, we've seen some interesting stuff come up, but I think there's a lot more to come. And I think right now there's still a lot of this is in the preliminary stages.
Yeah, you know, teams explore their trade possibilities first before
yes,
you commit $150
right.
or $200 million. So
and that's something that fans, I think, don't always understand.
Yeah,
it's important.
Ohtani and Giancarlo Stanton, and Ohtani especially, because everyone wanted him and money was not really going to be the issue. And Stanton, everybody, it just held up because it would affect everything else. Then you started exploring the trades. Mm-hmm. And as Scott Boras said this morning, we're not really to the point of the free agents yet.
Yeah.
You know, we're just starting meetings and can you bring J.D. Martinez in and let us look at him? But in terms of finishing the deal, that may be a while longer.
Okay. Can I circle back to Delino DeShields?
Yes.
TR, you wrote about him trying to earn this center field position. They may be bringing in some help, but can he earn it outright?
Well, I think he has a spot in the lineup.
Okay.
I think there's no doubt that Delino DeShields is going to bat leadoff for the Rangers. I think the question is, will he play left field, mm-hmm. or will we feel comfortable with him in center field? Is there a defensive center fielder that they can go out and get? Maybe it could be a part-time guy like a Jared Dyson or somebody like that.
Mm-hmm.
I think Delino's going to play for the Texas Rangers next year. We saw how valuable he was.
Right.
I think it's just a matter of what his defensive spot is going to be.
Okay. Richard?
Yeah, I mean, he's a reminder to me, don't ever give up on players. When a player's got a lot of talent, he was a high draft pick, and he comes from he's got baseball in his DNA, and he's got that gene where he cares. He cares and wants to. He wants to be great, and that, you know, he's got the ability to be great.
Okay. So I don't want to go back. We're going to close the Ohtani chapter here, but the Rangers are onward and upwards from this moment, right? So
Yes. What's
they're not going to replace him. He's not replaceable. We're not sure what he can do yet. But what's best case scenario that they can go out and get somebody and, you know, the guy can do just as good of a job on the mound at least?
Oh, it'd be Jake Arrieta.
Okay.
I mean, the whole Greinke thing is interesting. I think the best case scenario for the Rangers is finding common ground with Scott Boras and getting something with Jake Arrieta. He's a local kid. He lives down in Austin, Texas.
And, yeah.
Went to school at TCU.
Texas Christian University. Went
Horned
to high
Frogs,
school.
Right?
Horned Frogs.
Went to high school
right.
at Plano East High School in my hometown of Plano. But, you know, this is a guy who could be a leader of this pitching staff, both on the mound and in the clubhouse, kind of like Cole Hamels is.
Okay.
Give him the innings, shoulder the innings, pitch in some big games, and get him back into postseason.
This is not likely to happen quickly.
Okay.
Scott Boras wants to let this play out. There are things he wants in terms of finances.
Sure.
And he may not get that, but you want to push the market as far as you can, and nobody is better at it than Scott Boras.
You are right about that. You guys are awesome. That's going to do it for our Facebook Live. I'm Danny Wexelman. This is Richard Justice and T.R. Sullivan. You can go to Rangers.com for all your information, and we'll see you guys soon. Welcome to the 2017 Winter Meetings here in sunny Orlando, Florida. I'm Danny Wexelman with Richard Justice, our executive correspondent for MLB.com, and Brian McTaggart, who covers the Astros for MLB.com. I'm going to start things off, though, today with you, Brian. Let's start first. A.J. Hinch met with the media on Tuesday. I want to know the most interesting thing that he said.
The most interesting thing for me was something that really is off the field in that even now going out around Houston, he was out to lunch with George Springer recently, and people are still coming up to him, telling them how much that World Series meant to them, their family. They're saying, man, we were at Colt Stadium in the 1960s with the Mosquitoes. All 56 years of the Astros, we were there. Wow. We never thought we would see this. And it just, everywhere he goes, people are coming up and just want to say hello, maybe get a picture and see how much it means to them. And it means a lot to AJ for that to happen. I mean, he loves to take time with them, and I thought that was really cool.
You've lived your whole life in Houston and mostly heartbreak in terms of sports.
Yeah.
What was it like? What's it been like for you to try to grasp that these guys that you've covered for 15 years and these kids, Altuve and Springer and Correa, that they've done this thing that's a dream? What's it like for you as a resident of Houston?
Yeah, it was kind of hard to believe, you know, in the ninth inning of game 7, when there was one out, I sort of just stopped what I was doing and just said, I need to just watch this, focus on it,
Yeah. And
just remember this day. It was you know, one of the biggest days in Houston sports history, if not the biggest. And then to watch them celebrate, it was just kind of hard to sink in. And, you know, I had so much work to do, but my phone was going crazy with friends, high school classmates, family. Everybody was just so excited when 5 years ago, no one really knew much about the Astros. Maybe they knew about Altuve, but the whole city was behind them. It was really amazing just to see how everybody was so involved.
We had dozens of friends say some form of this.
Yeah.
But down on the field after the game, one of the local sports anchors told Brian, first thing I thought of was my father.
Yeah.
Or the other said, I thought of my grandmother or grandfather, how they would watch the games together. And I've gone around town and said to husbands and wives, at any point did one of you cry? And everyone has said, at some point, I cried. And one guy told me, he goes, you kidding? No, I didn't cry. And his wife said, now, game 6 against the Yankees, I looked over there and there were tears running down your
eyes. It wasn't dusty in that room. Don't try to lie.
Yeah, right, right.
I mean, those memories are things that you will tell everyone and anyone for the rest of your life. You'll never forget where you were and what you were doing. I think that's really special.
Well, it used to be like that. I never forget where I was when they lost to the Mets in the NLCS in 86 when I was 16. And I pulled the Mets pennant off my wall and wadded it up because I had all the pennants from all the teams. But yesterday I ran into Joe Sambito, who's an agent now. He pitched for the Astros in the 70s and the 80s and, you know, went through some heartbreaks. And he said people were texting him, congratulations. He was like, he didn't understand it at first, but he was like, you know what, they won this for me too. They won it for all the Astros, that played previously.
Absolutely. Yeah, we saw Bagwell and Biggio on the field after the game.
Yeah, yeah, what was that
like? And the emotions seemed... Yeah. More than they could describe. Reed Ryan, Nolan was crying, I don't think, but Reed Ryan, the president of the team, he was certainly crying. And I see George Springer's dad after the game, and he goes, don't even look at me. And he points to his wife, George's mom, and she's a basket case.
Of
and
course,
that's how it hit people.
Yeah, I think that's great, though. Let the emotions come in. It's well-deserved. We have a ton of questions coming in on Facebook right now, so we're going to get to those. We're going to skip my questions because these are way better. We've got Rick, who asks us, Gregerson leaving didn't faze me. Any other departures about to hit us?
I don't think so. I mean, they lost Gregerson.
Right.
You know, he played a key role in the bullpen the last few years. Mike Fiers has signed a contract, but, you know, they didn't tender him a contract, so that was no surprise. But all the key pieces are coming back. Their whole lineup's back. The rotation is back.
Mm-hmm.
So they're looking to add right now, but they're not going to lose anybody else unless they make some sort of trade, which I don't think they will, where it would impact the Major League club.
I wanted to know, their top prospect is Kyle Tucker, young outfielder. He got to AAA last year, right? Barely?
Double A.
Double A. Left-handed hitter. Do you see him not in the mix opening day, but
no.
By the All-Star break?
Probably not. I mean, it's going to be hard to crack that lineup, but I do think maybe in September he could get his feet wet. I mean, I think he's only 20 years old still. But I think going into 2019, I think Kyle Tucker's, you know, a big part of their plans. I mean, right now they have Springer in center, Reddick in right. Fisher's going to get a look in left field.
And that's another guy we should mention. He's a top prospect, Derek mm-hmm. Fisher.
Yeah.
Right. How do you get him at bat?
Well, left field is going to be kind of the open area. Marvin Gonzalez is going to, he played left throughout the playoffs, but they want to move him around more. But Fisher's going to get a lot of those at-bats. Colin Moran might even get some at-bats in left field. But,
mm-hmm.
Fisher, we all know him from scoring the winning run in Game 5 of the World Series. But the kid's got a pretty good track record in the minor leagues of hitting with a speed-power combination. So he's going to get a shot as well.
Okay, so Caitlin, I think you're going to like this question, Brian. Brian, are you writing a new book covering the World Series experience?
No. MLB came out with their official coffee table book,
That's
Mission
right.
Accomplished, and there are a few words in there that I wrote. Also, A.J. Hinch wrote some words, Springer, McCann, and somebody else, can't remember. But, I did write that Astros book a couple years ago,
That's
and we
right.
are going to have a World Series edition.
Okay. What was the name of that book?
100 Things Astros Fans Should Know and Do Before They Die. World Series edition coming out.
I love it. I love it. Okay, Dora asks, for how many seasons will Keuchel remain an Astro?
Well, at least one more.
Yeah.
We all know that he's going to be a free agent after next year, and he recently changed agents to Scott Boras, which means he's probably going to test the free agent waters. So.
Okay.
And I know Dallas is going to go out there and try to get his market worth, which will be a huge contract, especially if he can prove he's healthy after a couple of seasons where he was hindered by injury. But he's only 29. He'll turn 30 on January 1st, and so this will be his one chance, I think, to get that big deal. So I think he's going to go for it. Whether the Astros can keep him, I'm not sure, but they do have some young pitchers coming up through the system. But let's at least enjoy the beard for one more year. So.
Yeah, I like that. I like that a lot. Okay, let's see. Moss asks, who on the current roster can fill in for Fiers, or do you think the Astros will trade for a fill-in?
Well, they have how many starting pitchers? Six right
they have
now?
Six.
Okay.
Right. But I think the way Jeff Luhnow works is he's going to go kick the tires on other starting pitchers.
Yeah.
Because how many are you going to need at the end of the day? 10, 12? And who's their top pitching prospect?
Forrest Whitley.
Yeah, Forrest Whitley is probably.
He could be out by the end of the year.
Yeah.
Like Tucker. Well, last year they had four starters on the DL at the same time.
Mm-hmm.
So they're going to need the pitching depth. Plus, if they can sign another starter, they could move Peacock to the bullpen.
Full time.
That would take care of one of their bullpen needs. But, Fiers wasn't active on the playoff roster, so
right.
I don't think they're – I mean, he did a nice job in the middle of the season, that 10-start stretch where everyone
right.
was injured.
Yeah.
But for the most part, he was kind of an expendable piece.
This is a luxury not many teams have. You have six starters. I mean, six major league ready starters.
Ready to go.
And you're going to need 8, 10, 12
yeah.
before the year's over. So, while we hear teams down here, we need a fourth starter, a fifth starter – well, the good teams are looking for a seventh, an eighth, and a ninth starter.
And we're not even talking about Joe Musgrove, who
right.
was in the rotation for most of the year, and now he's in relief. He could be in the mix as well. So they have a lot of starting pitching.
I like that. Okay, I like this question, too. Hopefully both of you maybe have one. Jennifer asks, which Astros prospect do you like best and why?
Well, I was at the Futures game and saw Kyle Tucker turn on a 102-mile-an-hour fastball. I mean,
he's pretty good.
He's just... they took, help me here, Bregman second in the 15 draft, and Tucker went fifth, right?
He was
second
fifth, yeah.
So you're drafted fifth in the draft. You're a top prospect.
Yeah.
And he's one of those guys that walks like a star And just to see him with that, he's got a slow demeanor and a fast bat. I mean, I think the Astros would say that one of the reasons they didn't get Justin Verlander at the trade deadline is Kyle Tucker was untouchable.
Yeah.
And they were going to make that deal without throwing him in it. That's how they value him. Maybe not like they value Alex Bregman, but he's pretty far up there.
Okay, I like that
for
answer.
Me, it's Forrest Whitley. I mean, they're the top two guys. Whitley, the pitcher, I mean, he had his Double-A debut last year, and he came, I think, struck out 11 guys at 20 years old in the Texas League. So, big, tall kid, just has great stuff. And, I think he'll be pitching in the big league rotation at 21, 22 at the latest.
Thoughts on making McCullers our closer? High leverage relief? What do you think?
I don't think so.
Okay.
I mean,
Tony.
Yeah, sorry. I mean, I know he pitched in relief some in the playoffs.
Yeah.
In game 7 of the ALCS, he finished that game out. But, look, Lance McCullers is a starter.
Mm-hmm.
I know he's basically a two-pitch guy, but, you know, stuff's good enough. And if he can work that change up to where you want him starting, if he's healthy, he's a guy that could be a top-of-the-rotation starter.
What do you think?
The value of a top-of-the-rotation starter is probably 10 times what a reliever is. And that means earning power and all that. But guys want to start. We talking about Joe Musgrove. I mean, he wants to start, right?
Sure, yeah.
He still wants to start. Lance McCullers has a chance to be a star, and you want to exhaust every possibility of him being a starter. I think the Astros see him in their rotation for the foreseeable future.
You know what else I think he wants to be? I saw on Twitter that he's trying to get into a Marvel movie. Did you guys see that? Do you know what I'm talking about? He's trying to play and act. I don't know if you have time for that, Lance McCullers.
He's involved in a lot of stuff.
He's involved.
Well, he has a foundation. He's 23 years old, has a foundation. I didn't have a foundation at 23. Still don't have one. But, yeah, he does a lot of good stuff for the community as well.
Great guy. All right, we have a couple of people on Facebook right now asking about Christian Yelich playing left field for the Astros. What do you think about that? Marcell Ozuna just went to the Cardinals. So what about Yelich?
He would look great in left field. I don't think the Astros are willing to give up the prospects I think they would take to get that deal. I mean, look at, you know, the price for Ozuna. They're going to want more for Yelich. I mean, he'd be perfect, and the contract is good. But, I mean, they could use him. They don't need him. I mean, they have the best offense. And in the majors, you know, he and Jake Marisnik are very, very close. So that would be a cool little story, but I just don't see them adding that kind of caliber offensive player.
Okay. All right, James. James, you're asking, what is Jose Altuve's contract situation? Is an extension on the horizon?
No.
Okay.
He's represented by Scott Boras. It's two more years, right?
Option years, right?
Yeah, he's got a very team-friendly contract.
Mm-hmm.
He will be a free agent at 29 years old, and I've asked Scott Boras three or four times, why don't you go in and redo this contract? And he answers the same thing, same way each time. He's going to be a free agent at 29. He's going to be a multiple batting champion, an American League MVP. He is underpaid now.
Yeah.
He is going to make plenty of money.
Made a lot of Astros fans smile right now.
Yeah, look, here's the deal. Like, would the Astros like to sign him to an extension? Absolutely.
Sure.
Scott Boras believes in letting players go to the market, and the market sets the value. And that's part of what we're running so behind here. His guys, Arrieta and J.D. Martinez, et cetera. I mean, the market hasn't started yet. And he believes don't put a cap on a player. Let's see what he can make.
Brian, what were you saying?
Well, Harper and Machado, when they go to free agency, I think whatever they get, Altuve could get that or not more. I mean, I think he'll set the standard, and they'll shoot higher than that. So he's in line for a huge payday.
Has anybody in baseball accomplished more than Jose Altuve the last 5 years?
That feels like a trick question.
Well, All-Star, batting champ, MVP, World Series champ.
Three-time batting champ. He's got 5 All-Star games.
I'm going to say the answer is no.
Well, I mean, the point is, when we talk about Harper or Trout, I mean, this is an elite guy.
Right. Yeah, absolutely. All right, let's talk about another elite guy that the Astros didn't get, but that's all right. Michael asks, please talk about the reaction within the Astros of the Stanton trade to the Yankees. We're going to close this chapter after this question, though, on the Stanton conversation. Brian?
Yeah, I asked AJ and Jeff Luno about that, and they thought it was interesting. Obviously, they went 7 games with the Yankees in a toe-to-toe series, and now the Yankees are adding Stanton, who's coming from the National League, so the American League is getting that much tougher. But, you know, I think they're looking forward to the challenge of facing them. But I don't think there's any doubt if they, want to win the World Series again, they're probably going to have to find a way to go through the Yankees, and the Yankees are going to have to find a way to go through Houston, as Alex Bregman reminded us on Twitter
right.
the other day.
Yeah, Bregman has already tweeted the road still goes through Houston.
Right.
Yeah, he did. I he's a good follow on Twitter,
he's
by
good,
the way.
Yeah.
All right, last question, and going back to the World Series, Michael asks, do you think we get back to the World Series? We have a star-studded team. Guys,
it's hard to say. I mean, they have a really good shot. I mean, they have everybody back. I mean, as we saw, you get in a series and anything can happen. One pitch, one play. I mean, they were toe-to-toe with the Yankees for 7 games, toe-to-toe with the Dodgers for 7 games.
Yeah.
So, you know, Marwin Gonzalez doesn't hit that home run in game two. They don't win the World Series. So it just depends. But I think they have a great shot. I mean, I think they'll win the division going away. If they're healthy, the rotation going into the playoffs, they'll be in great shape. And with the Indians and the Yankees mm-hmm. and who else who would be their big contenders?
Well, the Angels may be
the
good.
The Angels will be better.
Jeff Luhnow and every other general manager will tell you the same thing. You never put a team together with the idea of winning the World Series. You put a team together with the idea of competing, getting to October, and then going and giving it a try. You know, because when you look back on it, even the Boston series, it was just 4 games.
Yeah.
Those games, some of the road games turned this way and that. They had to come from 3-2 down to beat the Yankees. So you get close, you got a shot.
All right. Well, everyone's going to have to wait a little bit longer to see if the Astros can go back-to-back. But thanks for hanging out with us at the winter meetings. I'm Danny Wexelman, Richard Justice, Brian McTaggart. You can go to astros.com to check out all the latest, and we'll talk to you guys soon. Welcome to MLB.com Extras. I'm Danny Wexelman with Maria Guardado, who covers the Angels for MLB.com. And Maria may have been the busiest person here at the winter meetings because we uncovered some news. Maria, you've been following the story from the beginning about Shohei Ohtani and his UCL, so I'm just going to let you kind of talk and tell from the start what's been going on with him.
Sure. So, you know, when kind of a buzzy headline that came out last night from Yahoo Sports was the fact that Shohei Ohtani has a grade one sprain of his right ulnar collateral ligament in his throwing elbow. And, you know, while that sounds pretty scary, it's you know, apparently the least severe type of UCL injury that you could have. Although, you know, there is the risk of, you know, that it could eventually require surgery to repair if it gets much worse. But, you know, he received a PRP injection in October to kind of help with some of the healing. The Angels were totally aware of this.
They knew about all this. Right?
Yes, this was made aware to all teams as part of the medical report that was kind of distributed by Major League Baseball. So all the teams were aware of this, and it didn't stop them from trying to go after him.
Yeah,
so I think,
right.
You know, and the Angels themselves put Ohtani through a pretty thorough physical before they even signed him. So clearly they're aware of this, you know, issue, if you even want to call it that. But, you know, right now it's not the type of injury that's going to, you know, prevent him from pitching or pursuing his dream of becoming that two-way player in the majors. So while it is something I think to keep an eye on long term, I don't think it's something that's immediately going to, you know, result in some sort of, you know, inability to play or anything
right.
like that.
So, okay, are we reassuring Angels fans that he will be at spring training, he will be making the big league roster pending anything crazy, and people will be watching him pitch and hit? Is that right?
Yeah, I do think that is accurate. Ohtani mania will continue, I'm sure, unabated until, you know, God forbid anything else happens. So,
right.
Yeah, but yeah, no, I think he's still set to show up in spring training, you know, next February, and kind of get his transition to the major started.
It was a circus here in Orlando. That was Tuesday night when all of this came out. But like you said, you've been following the story. The teams knew about this. So everyone can unpress that panic button for a second, especially Angels fans. Maria, you were at the press conference, his welcome press conference in Anaheim.
Mm-hmm.
That was last Saturday, so
yes.
It hasn't even been a week. And I was watching it, and I was watching him kind of crack jokes about Mike Trout and what number he was going to wear.
Mm-hmm.
And he even, like, wished Trout congratulations. And he seemed to have a pretty good personality. What do you think?
Yeah, I mean, it was interesting to me just because, I mean, you hear so much about him. You know, you see all the highlights of his 500-foot home runs and him hitting, you know, triple digits on the radar gun. But I felt like, you know, the man himself was a bit of a mystery, and I feel like he kind of started to peel the layers back a little bit during this introductory news conference at Angel Stadium. You know, as you mentioned, he was kind of, you know, he concluded his opening remarks by congratulating his new teammate Mike Trout on his wedding.
Yeah.
You know, when he was asked why he chose to wear number 17, he joked, you know, well, I actually wanted 27,
right.
Which of course is Trout's number.
Yeah.
So yeah, I mean, I think you saw a little bit of the, you know, the 23-year-old in him come out. You know,
yeah.
I think it's pretty clear that he's come comfortable in the spotlight, but, you know, again, this is a guy who's been famous since he was a teenager. So, you know, I think he really has that aura of a star, and I think it's just, you know, time for him to really prove that he can be that star on the field as well as off the field.
Absolutely. So I have so many questions for you. The next one, let's talk about the six-man rotation.
Yes.
That's a possibility. Billy Eppler talked about that they could try to do that. How does that work for the Angels?
Yeah, so there are a couple of reasons why this arrangement, which is unconventional, would make sense for the Angels. One is the fact that, you know, in Japan, Shohei Ohtani typically pitched once a week. So I think that there's kind of a desire to you know, preserve that structure in place, especially since he really hasn't pitched more than 160 innings or so in a single season in the MPB. So there's a desire to kind of manage his workload, especially since he'll obviously be attempting to be a part-time designated hitter as well. So that's one way to kind of keep his workload in check. Another thing is that the Angels' rotation has just been decimated by injuries the past two seasons. So, you know, there's some belief that, you know, giving all these guys an extra day of rest could kind of help minimize injuries by giving them, you know, an extra day to recover. So, you know, that's another thing that's in play. And just also the fact that a lot of their starters have options, so they can kind of shuffle, you know, between the minors if necessary. And, you know, with the new CBA, they're going to be four extra off days. So, you know, that's another kind of scheduling quirk that you know, could help facilitate this arrangement for the Angels.
Are there any negatives to the Angels doing this? Obviously, guys are used to consistency. They have a routine. They don't break that. They've been pitching every fifth day for however long they've been playing baseball. So, but that maybe is a negative, but anything else that could arise?
Sure. I mean, I think that, you know, the Angels, I feel like, still haven't really reached out to their current starters that are, you know, have been in their rotation about this possibility. Yes, I mean, they're definitely going to, you know, have discussions with their starters. But like you said, I mean, you know, there's a possibility that some of them might not be as receptive to the idea of, you know, changing the routine up a little bit. But the other implication is financial, of course, because, you know, there are some guys who are heading into free agency after next season.
Yeah.
And, you know, in free agency, things like, you know, wins, innings, you know, all those things are, you know, affect your market. And, you know, that same is true for players who are eligible for arbitration, where those same statistics are kind of factored into calculating raises. So, you know, there could be some resistance from players. But, you know, in talking with Billy Eppler, he just, you know, was really, to him, the larger point is, of this, the largest benefit of this arrangement would just be keeping these guys healthy, which, you know, has been a challenge for them the last two seasons. So if he, you know, he thinks that would be the major selling point to the rest of his starters to kind of get him on board with this plan.
Yeah, we were kind of doing the math about what it would mean to their numbers, how many less games they would be pitching, and I think it came between like 4 and 6 less starts, which is pretty significant when you think about that. They, you know, not every starter qualifies for all of the titles that you can earn in the game, but that's a pretty good amount of games you're not pitching in. And guys are so competitive. They want to be out there every day. They want to be doing whatever they can. But I'm wondering, have you heard from any players, anyone about this?
I have not yet, but I'm sure that, you know, that will be coming up soon. That's probably the next kind of frontier of this story. So, yeah, I mean, I'm very interested to hear a lot of, you know, their side of the story, their perspective, how receptive they would be to this idea.
Yeah. Okay, so my next question for you is, when you first get to spring training and see Shohei Ohtani, and let's say you get a one-on-one with him, what's the first question you're going to ask him?
Oh, boy. You know, I'm not sure. Maybe, you know, what his relationship with Mike Trout is like. You know, who knows?
Yeah.
What he sent him as a wedding present. No, you know, in all honesty, I just say, I'm just curious to hear, you know, what the whole recruiting process was like for him. I mean, it seems like it was really a whirlwind that kind of, you know, drew in teams from all over the league.
Right.
And he ended up making his decision quite fast. I mean, he had until, I believe, December 21st or 22nd to make that choice, and he really, you know, kind of,
less than a week, right, by the time he was posted, that was Friday,
mm-hmm.
And then he was ready, he made his decision.
Sure, and yeah, and I also just would like to see, you know, get a little bit more clarity about why exactly he joined the Angels. I feel like that's still a bit of a mystery. I mean, you know, when he was asked about that, he just kind of kept saying, you know, I just had a feeling, you know, I just, you know, it seems like he just clicked, but,
just a feeling.
You know, who knows, you know, maybe there was some other element to it that hasn't come out yet, but will in the future.
You're going
to
dig it up, I'm sure. So listen, just because the Angels signed the Japanese Babe Ruth, this epic two-way guy, doesn't mean they're finished yet. What else is on their wish list?
Number one, second baseman. That's still, you know, their biggest remaining hole. Yeah. You know, another, they're probably looking to bolster their third base depth as well. You know, perhaps adding a right-handed hitter to kind of platoon with Luis Valbuena.
Okay. Have you heard any names? Anyone throwing out any names?
One guy that, you know, would make a lot of sense for the Angels in that kind of role would be Eduardo Nunez. Just because he's a guy who's very versatile, can play a lot of spots, and that will also be key because if the Angels were to go to a six-man rotation, they would have one less position player on their bench. So versatility is going to be really key for them to
so
kind of...
interesting. That, yes. That whole situation is people don't think about how many different changes could come from that.
Sure. And another guy, Todd Frazier, actually, is a guy who they've been linked to. So, and, you know, him and Mike Trout are both Jersey boys. So that would be another interesting duo.
Oh, my gosh. I could only imagine the conversation.
Yes. Lots of talk about Wawa, I'm sure. Yes.
Yeah, I wouldn't be mad about that, though. That's okay.
Yeah, that would be good television, you know. Yeah. So.
Okay, so let's spotlight Kevin Maitán.
Sure.
Why should Angels fans be so excited about this guy?
Sure. So, you know, Kevin, this deal still hasn't been announced officially by the Angels,
right.
But our friend Jesse Sanchez has reported that they reached an agreement with him for, I believe, $2.2 million. So
coming from the Braves.
Yes. So he was one of the prospects who was recently released by Major League Baseball, you know, after their thorough investigation into violations of international signings on part of the former Braves front office. So, you know, he was a guy who was really at the, you know, the most, kind of the prize of the his international class about a year ago. And the Braves originally signed him for about $4 million. So, you know, the Angels kind of got him at, you know, that half of that cost.
And he's young. He's
yes. He's 17. 17-year-old shortstop. You know, there's some questions of whether he'll stick at short. You know, some people think that he'll eventually end up somewhere else on the infield. But, yeah I mean, he's a guy who has a lot high ceiling, which, you know, the Angels farm system has not had a ton of those guys in the past. So I think he's someone to definitely keep an eye on and to, you know, someone who could potentially impact this club in the future.
All right. I love it. Anything else, Maria? Anything I'm missing? We've got one day left. Rule 5 is on Thursday. We're chatting it on Wednesday today. Anything else you think is going to come out of Orlando?
I'm not sure. I mean, I don't know if the Angels will take someone in the Rule 5 draft. They do have room on their 40-man roster, but, you know, I don't know if there are any guys that they're kind of looking out for, so we'll see.
We're going to see. All right. I'm Danny Wexelman. This is Maria Guardado, who covers the Angels for MLB.com. We'll talk to you guys soon. Welcome to MLB.com Extras. I'm Danny Wexelman with Greg Johns, who covers the Mariners for MLB.com. Greg, we've got to close a chapter. We are closing the Shohei Ohtani chapter, but the Mariners are moving onward and upwards, right?
Well, they have to. They put a whole lot this offseason into getting ready for Shohei, and if you listen to Jerry DePoto, a lot of the last year, really, in their presentation, and that was a big deal for them to go after Ohtani, and they really thought they thought they had a good line on this guy. They thought that it was a good fit, and it hurt when they didn't get him. But yeah, you don't dwell on this game. Jerry DePoto turns the page and starts working on the next thing.
Yeah, that guy's a hustler. He, you know, he grinds harder than anybody, I think, in the business. So I think the Mariners are going to be on the right side of this at the end of all of it.
Jerry does not sit still.
Yeah.
There's no question.
Okay, so let's talk about Scott Servais. You had a chance to listen in to his manager availability, which happens here at the winter meetings. And he had a lot of interesting things to say. He talked about Dee Gordon potentially leading off the lineup. That's where he's slated to be right now. And also his confidence in D playing in center field, right?
Yeah, and that's a big, that to me is one of the big stories of this offseason. It'll be spring training and really into the year, seeing how D, you know, adapts to playing center field.
Yeah.
He was a gold glove second baseman in Miami and worked hard to become that.
Right.
And when you're 29 years old and an established veteran, it's not always easy to say, hey, you know, go play a different position. He's embraced it. Scott has talked to him and said, you know, this guy wants to be as good in center field as he can possibly be. And the interesting thing to me, he's already started working on it. I mean, we're here in December, and D told them that he's already out shagging balls.
You have to,
Working
to,
on the different angles.
Like
yeah,
that.
I mean, it's going to be a new deal for him. Great athlete.
Yeah.
And the speed that he has, everything lines up to being a good fit. But the man has to get comfortable out there. You know, you're learning on the job in a big league stadium. It's not the easiest thing. They have full confidence that he can do it. And he's already, I think it's fascinating, he's already reached out to a guy named Ken Griffey Jr., who used to play a little center field. in Safeco Field back when they first opened it.
Yeah.
You know, and just to kind of get an idea of the mindset, you know, and any tips he can get. So he's kind of, you know, opened the door to whatever, you know, he can get. The Mariners outfield coach, Chris Prieto, is going to come down to Florida next week to work it with D personally and start getting with him. And there's a group of players, Nelson Cruz is leading, that are gathering kind of on their own, coincidentally, before D signed up, in Miami to kind of work out here in this week, just to get busy in the offseason.
Yeah.
D is going to join them and kind of get to know some guys early and work out with them. So things kind of lining up pretty early for D working out.
Yeah, it's funny how the cards kind of fall into place, right? So one thing didn't quite work out, but here you have an all-star second baseman moving positions, and he's already got guys on his side. And I think that by opening day, hopefully he'll be able to show off what he's learned in these next short, quick months, right?
And the flip side, pretty interesting guy to watch. I mean, this is a guy with some of the best speed in baseball. He's going to bat, as you mentioned, that leadoff spot, which Gene Segura hit 300 last year. They brought in, they really loved him in the leadoff spot. But you can drop Segura down now to number two, get Gordon with that speed, and he led the National League in stolen bases three of the last 4 years. And this is a guy with a speed element, and it's going to be fun to watch.
Feeling pretty good. All right, so it's been a little slow here in Orlando, to say the least, but that's okay. Jerry Dipoto doesn't care about that. He's a mover, he's a shaker, and the Mariners are still looking for that bullpen arm, right? But a couple guys have gone off the board. Luke Gregerson, Brian Shaw just went. So is there a guy that they're targeting that you've heard of?
It's interesting. I mean, they've been pretty quiet about who they're going for. To me, it's kind of the second tier group that Anthony Swarzak type guy. Steve Cishek, kind of that level of guy that kind of the established veteran that they can put in. What they want to do is lengthen that bullpen. A lot of teams are looking this way, and it's not the sexiest thing for fans, kind of looking for those big-name starters.
Yeah.
The Mariners are one of those teams that, looking at that model, you get your starters through four or five, six innings. If you can bring in a bullpen every night and soak up the rest of that, get into the back end with Edwin Diaz, they're closing out. Looking more of those middle-inning kind of guys, multi-inning kind of guys,
absolutely.
Versatility, that's the kind of guy they're looking for.
Those guys don't get the spotlight ever. They are kind of just looked over, grazed over, but sometimes they're the reason that you get to the ninth, right? They're the reason that you get to your closer if you need to. So I think that may be one of the biggest things that the Mariners could pick up.
You shorten the game by going to your bullpen early. Yeah. If you've got that lockdown bullpen, teams have shown it works.
Okay, so Felix Hernandez, we're switching gears here.
There we go.
13-year veteran. He's working on his flexibility this offseason. He wants to sustain what he's been able to do. He wants to have the strength and the durability. This is different for him. I want to tell you, I went back to St. Louis, and I went to a hot yoga class.
Nah.
And in my hot yoga class was the Albert Pujols. Obviously, still lives in St. Louis in the offseason. Mm-hmm. And he was there, and he was doing better than I was at hot yoga. It was amazing to see someone built, so muscular, be able to be so flexible.
Right.
This is important for Felix.
It is. And the reason he's going more that direction this offseason, he really last year bulked up. It was the WBC offseason, the getting ready to pitch. He pitched to get ready in Venezuela winter ball. He really pushed early, and part of his push was a lot of upper body lifting.
Yeah.
And he feels in hindsight, and the trainers as well, that he got just too muscular up top, and he had shoulder problems. You know, Felix, this is a guy with a lot of mileage on him, and he's going to try everything he can to see what works. A big key for the Mariners, if he can come back and be what he was, you know, 2 years ago, and stay healthy, pitch, get 30 starts, this is a different team, a different rotation.
Absolutely. Okay, let's spotlight Kyle Lewis for a second. He's coming back from knee surgery. Mm-hmm. He's not expected to play with the Mariners this season, correct?
Correct.
But why should Mariners fans be excited about this guy?
This is one of the most exciting prospects in baseball, and the unfortunate accident he had shortly after they signed him, after he got drafted. Collision in Everett when they were playing short A ball, home plate collision with a catcher and blew out his knee.
Yeah,
had to have major reconstructive surgery. He was in spring last year working his tail off. We were down there and he was over on the side field.
Have you talked to him?
Pullen says, "Oh, great, great guy."
Yeah,
and just a super light up a room kind of guy, and light up a field. Clearly the Mariners' number one prospect.
Yep,
they got to get him back on the field. He came back the second half of last year. at High A Modesto, had some a pretty good year, put up some decent numbers, real good in the postseason. And then they sent him to the Arizona Fall League, and that knee started barking a little bit,
yeah.
And they backed him off. They said, well, this is not the time we want to push.
No, definitely.
And so he sat down for the winter to heal that thing up. He's rehabbing again. They believe he'll be 100% start of spring. And where he starts is kind of, they'll see how he's looking. He'll either be back at Modesto or AA Arkansas.
Okay.
And he's a guy that I think we'll watch here as he gets healthy. Next year, big year for him to kind of just reestablish himself. This
yeah.
is who I am. Get healthy. Be out there. Center fielder who can run. Good athlete. Good looking prospect.
All right, Greg. Last thing. Is Jerry going to make a move in the next few days here, or do you think that he's more laying the foundation to get out of Orlando and then make things happen? What do you think?
I think he would like to make that move. He wants to get the pitching staff. He's looking at pitching. He feels like the position players are pretty set. Adding Gordon, adding Ryan Healy at first base. Those were his big keys in the offseason.
Yeah.
Jerry's a guy, I mean, you come to the winter meetings, usually he's got all his work done. And again, this year, five trades before we got here,
right.
Which is way more than anybody else in baseball.
That makes me tired thinking about all that work.
It's great to cover Jerry because as a reporter, you got stories coming all the time.
Yes.
You know, the bad thing as a reporter, you never know when the stories are coming.
Yeah.
And it's fascinating to cover him. But he, you know, at the winter, it's not do or die for Jerry to get it done here. He's going to get it done. He's laying the groundwork. Another pitcher or two, a reliever for sure, maybe another starter in there. And we'll see where he's going. But Rule 5 draft, he's
that's right.
He's going to go after. This is a guy who will acquire talent wherever he can find it,
yeah.
And he's always working the margins, getting that roster. 40-man, he looks top to bottom. He's going to make moves. If it makes him better, he's going to go for it.
He thinks outside the box. I think that's why I really like him. He's not afraid to color outside the lines and take those risks. And, you know, the Ohtani thing didn't work out, but you know what? I think at the end that it's Jerry's world, and everyone would be okay with that. So I'm Danny Wexelman. This is Greg Johns, covers the Mariners for MLB.com. So patient, be patient, Mariners fans, and we'll talk to you guys soon.